Get ready for Ready Radio with Doug and Amy. It's emergency preparedness for everyone. Brought to you by TruPrep. For all your prepping needs, visit TruPrep online at truprep.com or visit a TruPrep store in Roswell or Marietta. Listen in as Doug and Amy provide helpful tips on how to get ready for anything that comes your way. And now, your hosts, Doug and Amy.
Welcome, everybody. This week, we're going to take a special back-to-school episode to talk a little bit about education and some of the ways that you can be better prepared to head back to school. I know that here in Atlanta, several counties started this past week. Several are starting next week. I know that my son and daughters are scheduled to start private school on Tuesday, the 12th. And a lot of schools are starting now, which is really a huge change from when I was a kid. I don't know about you, Amy, but I was always off up until Labor Day.
Yeah, I think that's how it used to be. And, you know, I wonder if, because there's always talk about going to sort of the year-round school, and I think schools are maybe kind of inching towards that little by little.
Well, do you think that that's really the best plan? I know that it makes...
I think it might be.
Well, yeah. You know, it makes sense kind of in modern society, but do you realize why we had 4 months off in the middle of the year?
Because the farmers need their kids, right? To do the labor.
and I don't think that really should change. I think that that's an important aspect of what makes America America in all of this.
And that's with the time change too, right? Wasn't that related with the time change?
Well, partially. I don't think that the farmers really cared what time it was. When the sun came up, you went and you did your chores, and you worked until well after the sun went down, no matter what the clock said. I think that daylight savings time plays a lot more into our sedentary lifestyle, that it saves electricity because you get up earlier when it's just barely light, go to a place where you're going to be running the electricity anyway, and when you come home, it's now light longer, so you have less use of power because you're out doing something instead of sitting around the TV because it's dark outside. I think, honestly, that that's a much bigger factor, especially the way they've been playing with daylight savings time the last few years. They've been extending the number of months that daylight savings time is in place, which is a personal pet peeve of mine because the government has no business telling me when noon is. Mm-hmm. Noon is a celestial event.
It is.
Noon is when the sun is directly overhead. Mm-hmm. It's slightly different everywhere on the globe because it's a different time, and that's why we have time zones. But the government doesn't get to dictate when noon is. Noon is when noon is, and it doesn't matter. And this drove me nuts in Dillingham because Alaska is so large, it should be three time zones. But in order to kind of make it so that it's all on even playing field, it became one time zone. So then you add in daylight savings time. And so, you know, you'd go outside at like 9 o'clock in the morning in the summertime, and the sun was directly overhead, and you're like, how in the world is it 9 a.m. and it's noon?
Right.
I mean, we as a culture, we play with time a lot, and time is a very important thing. I mean, when you think about the way that we structure our lives, it's all based on time and time management, and that's one of the first things we learn in school is to, you know, stay on the clock and stay, you know, at certain times you have certain classes and you have to be structured and orderly, and the regimentation of our lives begins in preschool, where we start to learn that the clock rules when we do what we get to do, whether we have recess, whether we have lunch, whether we have math class, is all based on the clock.
All right, but don't you think there'd be like anarchy though if it weren't so structured?
In a school setting, probably, but
especially in an elementary school.
But this is not the way human beings were like made to work. I mean, we're farmers, right? I mean, isn't that what defines a human being is farming? I've always thought that way because, you know, there are animals that use tools, so you can't say tool use. There are primates that use tools. There are seals that use tools. There are dolphins that use tools in their daily lives to effectuate, you know, mechanical operations. So it's not just tool use. There's just about everything that we do, you can find a corollary in nature except for farming. That's something that sets us apart. And that's what's created the ability for us to be more than just, you know, animals running around trying to eke out a daily existence. A farmer frees up people to be painters and artists and musicians and scientists. If you don't have a farmer, one person producing enough food for 10, those 10 people would have to spend their entire lives scraping together food.
All right, and it's also enabled us to stay in one place.
Correct.
As well.
It allows, because otherwise you have to move with the herds or move with the
seasons. Which is how it used to be, right.
Right. So the farming has created all of our culture and society. And when our school timing is there, I think there should be a break so that we still have heritage there that farming is important. I mean, this goes back to all of those Jeffersonian principles mm-hmm. that I've always espoused. But more than that, the timing of the seasons are a lot longer period than the timing of our clocks. And I think that that's something else that we lose and that's being drilled into us on a daily basis is the tyranny of the clock. And just because the clock creates tyranny doesn't mean the absence of that clock creates anarchy.
Okay.
The idea is that when we were farmers, there are some things that had to be done. And they had to be done on a timetable.
Yes.
But was it on a timetable between 9:15 and 9:45? No. It was on a timetable of when there were eggs, you had to go gather them. When the cow's udder was full of milk, you had to milk it. And that was twice a day. Now, you could get the cow on a schedule so that it was at 10 o'clock and 10 p.m., or you could do it at 6 a.m. and 6 p.m., but it would just have to be about 12 hours apart. And you could work that around to be comfortable with all the other chores you had to do. You know, if you're going to go out there and plow the field, doing it at 6 a.m. before the sun comes up and gets hot might be a lot more comfortable than doing it at 4 in the afternoon. So you would move your chores around the day, but none of them had to be done on a regimented timetable. And there was something that you just worked at. And the larger scheme was, you know, spring for planting, summer for growing, fall for harvest. And there's a lot of work to be done in the fall, but then you hit winter, and winter's a time of rest. And I think that our physique, our psyche, our makeup is built around the changing of seasons, which we no longer have. I mean, if you work in a cubicle, how is May 1st different from September 1st different from December 1st? You walk into a room that's climate controlled and you mm-hmm. do the same job again. Every day you do the same job. There's no give and take. There's no change. There's no flow. There's no rest.
Right. And there's actually studies that show that like a lot of sleep problems sort of revolve around just the way that, you know, with electricity and lighting and things, because it's very hard to turn our world off.
Whereas before, when we were an agrarian society, winter was a time of rest. Winter was a time when you had put up your stores and you could do something else.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's something in our career-driven world that's really been lost, is the ability to do something else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people now are working three jobs to survive, and I think that's a travesty. But I think that you should have three jobs in a different capacity. You should have things that you alternate into and out of so that you have change and you have some, you know, variety in your life to give you more peace of mind and to stretch you in different ways.
Right.
It's kind of like cross training. If all you do is lift weights, you're not going to be a very fit person because you need to lift weights and you need to do cardio and you need to do all sorts of different exercises to build different muscle groups in different ways and use your body in different ways. Your mind, your soul is the same way. It needs to have different activities brought into it to create these synergies and to have the fullness of spirit that we need to survive.
Right, and we do need a balance. And that's a problem, is that we as a people in this day and age, we're not balanced. And everything is very high stress level, and everything is very fast. And the faster our technology gets, the crazier I think it makes us.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I don't think there is a good balance. And the thing is, when we have, you know, dual income, and we have, you know, just the constant have to be here and have to be there, and my children have to be in this. And I mean, we're not even sitting around the dinner table anymore.
We don't really do anything Mm-mm. as a family anymore.
No, we don't.
And it's a sad, sad state of affairs. I mean, one of the saddest things that I see happening is that people are so caught up in their job that they don't even see their kids anymore. You know, you've got people who are having their parents raise their kids mm-hmm.
or the daycares
mm-hmm. because they don't have time to be there.
Right.
And it's not that they don't want to be there.
Right.
You know, some of them may not know what to do with their kids. That's right. Another sad thing.
But who can be? I mean, when you have to work because the value of the dollar is so depleted.
Right.
You know, we almost don't have. I mean, when you want a certain lifestyle, and even to this day, I mean, my goodness, I mean, even, you know, that that magnificent house and fantastic car that you've wanted is out of reach, and now it almost feels like we have to go to work just to maintain you know, even a lesser lifestyle than what we actually strive for.
People who value having a new car over having that extra time to spend time with their kids. I mean, is there anything sadder in life?
Right, right. But I mean, and that's, I think that's kind of how it used to be. But now people are valuing that car just to get to have that transportation. I mean, because nothing's in walking distance.
No.
You know, there isn't. I mean, you can't hop on your bicycle and go to the grocery store, to the local, you know, market. It's a necessity. And sometimes even if it's not the vehicle that you want, I mean, you have to spend time. I don't know.
Well,
I don't know what
the
answer is.
In the end, you've got to learn. You've got to make choices. Is a brand new car more important than, you know, having less debt and being able to spend more time at home? Or will you make do with a 6-year-old car that's got 100,000 mm-hmm. miles on it?
But sometimes you can't get that. I mean, you have to, if you have the money to purchase an older vehicle, it works out. But I mean, you can't get a loan. Sometimes it just in order to afford a car, you have to get a more expensive car because they're not giving out loans for the older ones.
That's true.
And there's a lot of rocks and hard places out there.
There really are. And no matter which way you turn, it gets more and more difficult. A lot of these things are learned behaviors that come from our early days in school. And I want to kind of get back around to talking about what schools are teaching and what's important and what should you look for in a school. So we'll be right back, folks. You're listening to Ready Radio on News Talk 1160, the Talk of the Town.
And now, back to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ready Radio, and it's back to school time. My daughter we're in Gwinnett County, and she's already back to school. And now, Doug, you have younger children. I have high schoolers, and we have a very interesting, I think, take on what basically, you know, we have a lot to talk about. One of the things I think that we should sort of delve into a little bit is what are our children being taught at school?
Yeah, and that's a very important aspect of all this. I mean, we want our children to have the best opportunities in life. And so, you know, they're probably on a track for college. Because if you're going to get anywhere in today's society, you're going to have a college degree. I mean, because you're competing, even now, competing for entry-level jobs like at Walmart or McDonald's. You have people with college degrees scraping for those jobs because of the way the economy is.
Right. And the middle class is disappearing. It's going to be gone.
It's becoming a Red Queen's race. You've got to run as fast as you can just to stay where you are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a master's degree is now what a college degree used to be.
Right.
And I mean, that's where you're kind of like, well, you know, not everybody has that, but it's not that hard to get. But, you know, it's kind of separates you.
Right.
Well, you know, good Lord, 15, 20 years ago, a master's degree was something that very few people aspired to unless you were going to teach. And then you had people who had a PhD, which is even further beyond.
Right.
Now, a college degree just doesn't get you anywhere.
You're exactly right. And I mean, and these, you know, the kids coming out of high school, they're either going to be on the path to working at McDonald's or they're going to be on the path to owning the McDonald's. And there's just really not going to be much of an in-between.
Yeah. You see it in the professional class, doctors, lawyers, bankers, businessmen, the traditional middle class, upper middle class, but middle class, completely eviscerated. And I see that in professions all the time because of government interference. My own profession, criminal defense attorney, has been completely turned on its head through the public defender system over the last 30 years. I mean, there was a time when it was a very highly honorable profession. It was a profession that you could make very good money in, not, you know, upper class, not stratospheric, but you would make a more than decent living at it, and there was no question. But now, in order to find those kind of criminal cases, it's a tough thing because everybody qualifies for a public defender. And why would you hire an attorney and pay out, you know, $10,000 to $30,000 when a public defender will do it for free? And you see that. And most of the cases are public defender cases. Everybody qualifies. And that really changed the legal profession. And of course everybody goes, oh, you know, lawyers, they make so much money anyway, who cares? But doctors are getting the same bite now as public health care comes in and the Affordable Care Act takes over. You're going to see the exact same trend where why have you know, a highly paid doctor when you can just get a public health doctor who will do it for free?
Right.
And you're going to see that profession degrade the same way my profession has. And bankers, as their banks are becoming more and more consolidated, where you know there's like 3 or 4 major super banks across the globe, not just across America, that are consolidating power. You're seeing small, you know, it's It's a Wonderful Life playing out in real life as the small little guys who are part of the community who, you know, take and save up money and make loans. The savings and loan idea of small independence are being crushed out. So here's the core of the middle class, lawyers, bankers, doctors, gone, being completely turned into, you know, government servants.
Yes.
And where do we go from here?
And which way are our children being led? Because, you know, we are, you know, our sort of umbrella topic, we're talking about, you know, the whole back to school and what our children are being taught. And I'm really, you know, starting to see a division even in the schools. And, of course, you know, your children are young and and just kind of starting out. You got the babies. They're so precious, by the way. If we were a TV show, we could show pictures. They're just gorgeous.
My children are my life. You know that, Amy.
I do. Well, and you're a great dad. So I know you talk about them constantly. So. But you know, with mine are stinking rotten teenagers, which I adore. But they always bring challenges. But I'm definitely seeing just kind of the opportunities. When you look at, you know, you said that you're going more into the private school, and God bless you for doing it. I mean, if you're able to, you know, when you want the best for your kids, you know, sometimes you're, you know, a little concerned about the public schools and what's going on.
We hear such horror stories all the time, and I'm not saying that there aren't good public school teachers. I know public school teachers who pour their heart and soul out to save these kids.
But they have the gift for it.
There are inherent problems with a school of last resort. Let's be honest. I mean, public schools can't turn away troublemakers.
No, they can't.
They can't turn away people, and it's. I'm not saying that people with learning disabilities need to be turned away, but they don't have the ability to isolate them and give them the attention they need.
No,
they end
absolutely.
Up starting to mainstream them.
And
which
I really saw
yeah,
exactly.
Everybody.
And I saw that with my son. It's really interesting because I'm, you know, we're going to be empty nesters in about 3 years. My son has already gone through high school, and he
and it's
was
astonishing that you can be an empty nester at 29, Amy.
Right, and it's amazing. Yeah, yeah, it's really kind of cool. I started early, but my son was always the square peg trying to fit in the round hole, and it just, you know, the way that the public school system, and I wasn't able to put him through private school, but he always had the label. His father was dyslexic. He was always labeled ADHD. And what's amazing is the kid is absolutely brilliant. He is absolutely brilliant. It just astonishes me. When he was in middle school, he took apart his computer into pieces all over a spare room. I mean, I walked in. I was like, what? You ruined your computer. What did you do? The child put it back together and it worked.
Yeah.
He's brilliant. He's absolutely brilliant. He was...
That's one of the things I want to talk about in a later segment about taking apart appliances as an educational tool.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's really interesting that you bring that up. But, yeah, that is a sign of absolute genius.
Right, but it didn't. I mean, he failed so many classes. I knew his teachers on a first-name basis.
Yeah.
And bless their hearts, they had, you know, 25, 30 students. And my son did not fit. You know, he wasn't going to sit still and listen. He had to have something in his hand. He was shredding pencils.
Mm-hmm.
He had stuff falling out of his desk. He was, you know, and up and about. And it was he did not fit that environment.
And it's because of what the environment is training them to be.
Well, it teaches one style. I mean, people learn in different styles, and they cater to one.
Well, I think that it's more than just catering to a style of learning. It's trying to conform them to a style of living. And when you have 35 students in a classroom, or even 25 students in a classroom, everyone has to follow the rules, or it degrades into chaos. You have to sit in your desk. You have to, you know, do your lessons.
Which, of course, makes sense because, I mean, when you have one adult and 20 kids, because I've actually worked in children's ministry before, and I've had just a class full of kids, and if there is no order, there is chaos. So I understand why it's necessary.
But you could have, if you had a smaller class size, if you had a class of like 6 or 8 kids, and that's why I picked the private school I did, is because my son will be in a classroom with just 6 or 8 other
students.
Yeah,
that's fantastic.
With 2 teachers.
Mm-hmm. And with his age, I mean, that's ideal.
That way that they don't have to sit in a desk all day and just do paperwork. Mm-hmm. There's some of that, but there's also get up and go and we'll read and come over here and we'll do a physical activity.
Is it a Montessori type of school or no?
It's not.
Oh, okay.
It's just a small Christian school in Ackworth, Harvest Baptist. Everybody, great school. If you're looking for a school to put your kids into, there's still room available. They're starting on Tuesday. I know it's only a couple of days. Parent orientation is Monday night. It's a great opportunity. They are very affordable. And they give discounts when you have more kids in the school, so it stays very affordable.
Awesome.
Even on my meager salary, I'm able to put both of my kids into a good school that were there, and it's a sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are a lot of things I could do with that money other than put mm-hmm. kids to a private school.
Mm-hmm.
I could send them to a public school and use the money for who knows what, you know, building, you know, my DVD collection or whatever else. But it's an investment in all of our future, and I want the best for those kids, which is why we make these sacrifices. Is to make sure that they can go to a place like this.
Right. Yeah, absolutely true. But what do we do when we have when we cannot afford the private schools
isn't another option?
Mm-hmm.
There comes a time when you have to recognize what the school is doing, and the school is training them to work and live in a cubicle. That's what public schools are doing. They're training them go to college, get out, live in a cubicle, pay your taxes, do all these things in order. There's not this freedom. There's not creativity. And when they start cutting things, what's the first things that get cut?
Art,
music.
Yeah. Art, music. Mm-hmm.
Sports, to
mm-hmm.
some extent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, physical activity, like sports, stimulates the brain.
It does.
And it should be interspersed throughout their day. It shouldn't just be that after school you go play football. There should be some physical activity throughout the day to help stimulate the human mind and keep you energized and creative and keep you moving. The same thing with art and music. It shouldn't be a class at the end of the day. It should be a part of the day.
Mm-hmm.
You stop and sometime in the middle of the day and you have a sing. Just to get your mind moving and to get your mind off of what you were just doing to create a segue into the next area.
Well, good luck getting high schoolers to do that.
Well, you know, I'm absolutely certain you can get high schoolers to do it. You're just not going to do it singing some songs for grade schoolers.
Right.
I bet you, if you, I swear, if you go into any junior high school class today and start going,
uh-huh.
You would get them all singing.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, and you know, and the thing is, too, you always see them with headphones in.
Mm-hmm.
They're always listening to their music.
So it's just picking mm-hmm. the right music to get them engaged.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. And music in and of itself has value. And you can get them to do more. And it will stimulate their mind. If you look at an electrocardiogram of someone's brain
mm-hmm.
before and after listening to music,
mm-hmm.
you'll see it light up.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're using more parts of their mind than they do for any other aspect. And so sports does the same thing, particularly sports that involve visual acuity. Throwing a spear will stimulate your mind because it involves not only the physical activity of throwing something, which is what our bodies are designed for.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the things that separated us from Neanderthals, is because we have the ability to raise our arm above our shoulder and
mm-hmm.
toss something. Neanderthals could only pitch underhanded.
Yeah, I throw stuff in my house all the time with my teenagers. I'm like, dang it! Well, I'll tell you what, how about if we just take a quick break, and when we come back, I mean, some of these things that, you know, we may not have control over what's being taught, or some of the things that we feel like our kids need, maybe we can talk about some things we can do outside of the classroom. What do you think?
We'll be back in just a minute. You're listening to Ready Radio on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.
And now, back to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy.
Welcome back, folks. We were talking before the break about things that you can do to help fill out your kids' education. And of course, you know, our show is based on the idea of preparedness. And a lot of that is emergency preparedness,
mm-hmm.
but some of it's just life preparedness. We've had some discussions and topics of things like family and hearth and home and family values that really don't have anything to do with a disaster. But they have to do with being a full person. And a full and complete person is ready for a disaster. And we're not disaster radio. We're not preparedness radio. We're ready radio for a reason. And that reason is that we want you to be ready in all aspects of your life. And education is a huge aspect of your children's life and your life. And one of the most important things that any parent can ever do, and I'm going to go a step further, every adult has an obligation to the next generation to teach whenever they can. If you have an opportunity to, in your church group, to help out in the children's ministry, or in your synagogue to help lead children in music or choir, or in wherever you are, in your civic group, in your local community club, invite younger people in to be a part of it, and have a youth day for your Kiwanis or for, you know, the Chamber of Commerce meetings. I mean, anything. Just take your kids to work one day and let them see what you do, and not just go sit in the back and watch a movie, but come out and help me sell something. Come on out and let's show, you know, these people pocket knives, or show them, you know, the server room, or show them what you do and have them help you do it to whatever extent they can.
Right. And that's a great point. I mean, you don't have to be a teacher to work with kids. And there are a lot of people who have gifts and talents in many different areas. Now, some of you out there may not be so great with kids. Then don't do it. But some people really have a gift with children, and you don't have to be a teacher in order to use these gifts.
Well, you don't have to be great with children to lift up a child's spirit and life. Mm-hmm. I mean, it could be something. I know a guy who is really horrible with kids. Mm-hmm. Horrible, right? Can't talk to him.
Okay.
You know how he ministers to children?
Mm-mm.
He plays chess.
Okay.
He doesn't say a word to the kid, mm-hmm. ever. Sits down at the table, plays uh-huh. chess with a 9-year-old,
right.
beats him soundly, stands up, walks off.
Oh, funny.
But you know what? He's spending time, and mm-hmm. that act, the act mm-hmm. of losing, mm-hmm. teaches you far more than winning ever will.
Oh, you know what? I'm so about that. Like, with my children, we never lost to them on purpose, and one of the things we always taught, and it's really kind of funny right now, sort of a jab, but we taught our kids when they were young that when the other person wins, you always say congratulations,
mm-hmm.
Which kind of turned the table on, you know, with throwing the fit or the temper tantrum or I'm not going to play anymore, you know,
yeah.
taking my ball and go home kind of a thing. So now, it's really hysterical, Doug, because, you know, of course, the youngest in the house is nearly 16, and we still play games and things like that. And so cards, love to play cards.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when somebody just crushes the other person, of course, it's the rolling of the eyes. Congratulations.
Yeah.
That's kind of, you know, become sort of a family tradition.
Well, my son, you know, he's only 6 years old, and I've been teaching him to play chess. And the first time I played him, I won, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't pulling any punches.
Right.
But I did explain everything I was doing.
Yes,
so I
of course.
Opened it up.
I mean, there's age-appropriate thing, yeah.
But he got very frustrated. He mm-hmm. got very angry.
It's a tough game, of course.
And at the end, you know, he didn't want to play anymore. I was like, mm-hmm. well, let's play something else.
Mm-hmm.
And so we played dominoes, which, honestly, I'm horrid at. I am horrid mm-hmm. at dominoes. And he beat me soundly.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, so should I now get all mad and say, I don't want to ever play with you again? Because you beat me.
Mm-hmm.
And the light went on over his eyes. He's like, yeah, Dad, I'll play chess with you again.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, it's these learning lessons. And these
that
are lessons
life is full of, yes.
that we teach. Now, we can do a lot more than just these little moments. We can do so much more if we have a plan. And that's what we need to do with our education system in the shambles that it's in. And I'm not saying that there aren't good teachers. I know them. I love them. I mean, my friend Bill Stanley pours his life out to help kids learn math, and he is a fantastic teacher.
Oh, there is nothing better than a good teacher, let me tell you.
But the system as itself works against everybody.
Mm-hmm.
The system is set up to work against people succeeding. They want them to become conformists. And if you want to teach them how to be full and complete human beings, you're going to have to break free of that system and teach them things that honestly I think are dangerous. There
Such
are some
as?
Dangerous things that every child should learn and know how to do.
Is this the knife throwing segment?
Well, not knife throwing,
oh.
but I think that children should be, you know, allowed under supervision to use a pocket knife.
Mm.
It's your, you
oh,
know,
sure.
it's
That's
your,
what Boy Scouts your, is all about, right?
Right. I mean, that was one of the Boy Scout things, is you get a pocket knife
mm-hmm.
when you,
oh,
you know,
yeah.
do your things.
Oh, you are a big shot when you get your pocket knife.
And the reason is because it's a responsibility issue.
Yes.
You have to learn.
Mm-hmm.
You can hurt yourself with
oh,
it.
Yeah.
You've got to learn
mm-hmm.
to be responsible.
And you know what? Sometimes it's important for the little boys to get cut. And little girls.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you cut yourself, that's a great learning moment.
I got lots of scars.
Yes,
even,
you do.
Even right now.
You're showing one off right now. Yeah.
yeah. I mean,
you have to tell me the story of that one.
Yeah, long story.
Later then.
it helps them learn confidence. It helps them learn respect.
Mm-hmm.
Respect, you know, fear of the knife, but not to be afraid of it. And fire is another good one like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, children are usually afraid of fire. I know that.
Mine weren't.
Okay. My son is.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And my daughter's not, but my son is.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that we're going to be working on this fall. I'm building a fire pit.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to teach him to build the fires in the fire pit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Is fire a dangerous thing? Absolutely. Can it hurt people? Absolutely. Teaching him how to control it is fundamental
mm-hmm.
to being a human being. Having him conquer his fears slowly, carefully, nurturingly, you know, not throwing them into the deep end of the pool and seeing
right.
if they swim.
Right, of
but,
course.
But building them up with the confidence to do whatever comes up
mm-hmm.
and to tackle these problems and to be able to deal with them. That's important. You can't coddle your kids forever. You can't keep them in diapers until they're 4 years old.
Although some people do try. Even high schoolers.
Yeah. You know,
a lot of micromanagement going on out there right now.
Well, and then there are a lot of
helicopter
people,
parents, I think is the new phrase.
Helicopter parents, mm-hmm. people who just don't want to let them grow up. Mm-hmm. They would rather them always be little babies, and they treat them that way.
Well, the problem is when they're let go and into the world, they have no idea what to do.
Yeah.
I mean, when you don't know what to do with a bank account or how to manage your money or your time, it's just being set up for disaster, I'm afraid.
So how do we foster them to want to explore and learn and do on their own? One of what you brought up earlier is that your son took apart his computer. Now, he did that without you prodding him into it, I'm guessing.
Oh, my goodness. I was not real happy when I saw that.
Well, I think that shows not only independence, which is remarkable in today's society, but pure genius. Because he took it apart to figure out how it worked.
He did. Yep.
When you have
he's a curious little booger.
When you have children, particularly from the 5 to 13 age, you need to start breaking stuff.
Well, you I need think to, that kind of happens naturally.
You need to take it apart afterwards and mm-hmm. show them, hey. You know what? I have no idea how this works. Let's take it apart and see if we can mm-hmm. figure out what it does.
You know, I wonder if they still do it. There's a camp I sent my children to called Camp Invention.
Oh.
I think it was. And I think they still do it, fairly inexpensive. But that's what they did. They said, please give us anything that is, was mechanical, is no longer working. And they just had screwdrivers. They had tools. They took stuff apart. They created new stuff out of it. It's interesting.
Put a power tool in the hand of your second grader. And say, unscrew this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, an electric screwdriver, they're not going to jack themselves up with an electric screwdriver. We all know this. But you know what? Giving it to them and saying, here's how you use it. You do it.
Mm-hmm.
And when they take that first step and do it on their own, the confidence it builds.
Oh, absolutely.
We talk so much about self-confidence. Well, how are we going to build self-confidence? Let's make it so that nobody ever loses a game.
Oh,
that'll
my
build self-confidence.
Gosh.
No.
I am so glad my husband is not here right now.
If you want to build self-confidence, give them something to be confident
mm-hmm.
in.
And it's okay to win.
It's okay to win. It's okay to lose.
It's important to actually.
it's okay to learn how to lose.
It's very, you know what? Honestly, it's very important. I mean, look at our relationships now. You know, those that who are young and they learn this as, being younger or as teens, preteens, when they learn to win and lose, they're much better in relationships.
Yeah, because relationships are all about winning and losing and learning how to
get... And you have to lose gracefully.
Learning how
times.
To get over it.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Learning how to let go, learning how, to work as a team, to build confidence in each other, to trust each other. Terribly important in relationships, terribly important in life. And where do we learn these lessons? Well, we learn them through team sports. We learn them through interaction in school and high school. But when we're told everybody wins all the time, what do you do when there's a complete disagreement? What do you do when you can't reach a resolution?
All right, and everybody, it's so cute. I mean, you want your child to play soccer and get the trophy at the end. Every parent wants that for their kids. And then, it's so hard to look at your child with the little tears welling up in their eyes. Mm-hmm. And, if they see someone else, have something that they don't, of course you want the best for your kids. But what you don't realize a lot of times is what you really want for your kids is not that trophy. It's the sportsmanship.
It's the experience.
It is. But you know what? I mean, truly, if you win at something, let me tell you, when your son beats you for the first time at chess, the pride that is going to swell up in him is not something that you could just give him and hand over to him by letting him win every time. He will not know that.
Absolutely. And, he's too young to realize that. But we as adults need to know that. The problem is I think that a lot of adults today don't know that pride for themselves. They've never had that kind of experience where they have had to fight hard for years to get good enough at something to be able to pull off a victory.
Right.
And, it's easy. It's handed to them. Everybody wins. And mm-hmm. they don't have that kind of pride. They don't even know what self-esteem is.
Right.
If you've never had to fight to win, how do you know what self-esteem is?
Yeah. Yeah. You just don't. And that's the thing, too. I mean, if you've ever seen like a 2-year-old tantrum, which, I just think it's precious. I just have to laugh at these little kids. I think they're absolutely precious. But without giving into them and sort of teaching them, I mean, you really have to guide them.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is that I'm seeing is that some of these children are not growing out of their tantrums mm-hmm. well into elementary school, middle school, high school, and even into their 20s and even into adulthood. We're seeing baby tantrums.
Yeah.
And I just kind of throw my head to the side and go, really?
The problem is that we have a generation now that instead of being raised, they just grew up.
Mm-hmm.
They're still who they were when they were
toddlers and adult bodies.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And it's a dangerous thing. So how do we overcome this? How do we teach our children? How do we get to the point where our children know better?
Right. I mean, there's a whole lot of patience involved. A whole lot of patience involved. And I'll just give you sort of a little example. My stepson, who I absolutely adore, has been living with us. And in the past, he's been raised a little differently mm-hmm. than in our home. And, you know, I don't believe in the yelling and screaming. My philosophy is if you have me yelling and screaming, I just lost the battle.
Absolutely.
That's how I've always been. I asked him, he wanted to go to a friend's house. I asked him, I said, okay, that's absolutely fine. Just have the parents call me tonight just to check in. Let me know where you're at. He said, okay. Well, they didn't. Mm-hmm. And the next day I was like, well, where was my phone call? Oh, I'm sorry. And he gave me this big excuse. So I just put that in my pocket. I didn't yell at him. I didn't scream at him. I just put it in my pocket until he asked to go to a friend's house. You know, it was like 2-3 nights later.
Right.
And he's like, oh, you know, some friends are getting together and they're doing this big thing and da, 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 can I go? And I said, oh, honey, I'm so sorry. No. You remember when you didn't have the parent call? I'm not going to let you go tonight. But I'll tell you what, we'll try again at some other time. And he knew. He knew it was justified. He was like, oh, okay. And he walked away.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, you know, there's ways. But he's learning. You know, he's learning. My son wouldn't get up out of bed in the mornings. You know, my 25-year-old now, who's brilliant. And
having trouble getting out of bed.
He's finally got it figured out. But, I mean, I would not yell and scream at him. And if he did not get out of bed, then he would get cold water. And he'd yell and scream at the top of his lungs, I hate you! And I'd say, I love you. Get up.
You know,
a lot of it is a lot of patience.
With my son, sometimes we have these sorts of fights, and the hard part is to not get upset, because you see, you know, some of the resentment or the hurt in them, and you want to do something. But the truth is, you have to sit down and calmly talk to them,
right,
and get
yes.
to the root and get to why they're feeling this way. I've sat with my son. He's doing remarkably at this point.
Good.
With everything that's going on in our lives, he is really doing remarkably. But there are some times when I need to take him into his room, and I sit there and I sit on the floor with my back to his door, and I say, son, you got to talk to me, and I want to know what's going on. Well, this is going on. I said, you know, I don't think that's what's going on. Let's get to the bottom of
mm-hmm.
it. And over a half hour, we get to the bottom of what he's really feeling, and the relief he feels mm-hmm. from being able to finally get it off his
right.
chest.
Right.
These are things that just, they're life-changing moments, and they're building the bond between him and me. And we're working through things together. And it's not that he gets to make decisions, but it's that we work together through
mm-hmm.
things.
Yeah.
And these are the kind of lessons and education you need. Folks, we'll be right back. You're listening to News Talk 1160, the Talk of the Town.
And now, back to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy.
Welcome back, folks. We've been talking about some really important things, family and education and learning to grow together. But, you know, all of our kids end up going out of the home and going in loco parentis to their school, be it public or private, where they have to live their own lives under a little bit different supervision. And I'll be honest with you, Amy, some of this makes me nervous because I'm not there to safeguard and protect them. You know, my son went to kindergarten last year. Both my son and daughter are going to be going to start school this year.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to be out of the home for 8 hours a day under someone else's care. And I honestly have some anxiety.
Oh, of course you do. And a lot of time, you know, a lot of it is because they are so little. And I mean, you know, it does get a little bit easier as they get a little bit bigger. It's kind of funny because it's difficult, and then it's not so difficult, and then when they become teenagers and they're driving, and then you're scared to death again. So I mean, you know, and I think we as parents, I don't know if that ever goes away, but
let me interject here,
yes,
because I know that you've got a really great point about how to keep them safe when they're not from home. But talking about driving, I think that you should let little kids drive a car.
Doug?
No. I'm serious.
Really?
I'm serious. When I was...
Maybe a golf cart or something.
I was about 8 years old, uh-huh. and my mom put me on her lap
mm-hmm.
and let me drive around an
empty
parking
lot. Oh, so like steering? And
yeah,
oh, right.
steering.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, by right. eight, I was almost old enough to touch the pedals, but I was a big kid.
Uh-huh.
By the time I was 10, I could definitely drive the Chevette that
uh-huh.
we owned. But she had me drive around and around on a parking lot sitting
uh-huh.
on her lap. And
mm-hmm.
when your kids start getting really super fascinated with dinosaurs and they're just spitting out all the names and doing that, cars are modern dinosaurs. And this is a place where they can have mastery and control over something bigger than them. And you know what? Them sitting on your lap in a private parking lot, not on the public street.
And not in Atlanta.
Not in Atlanta. in a private parking lot with nothing around them is perfectly legal. Mm-hmm. Private property. You can do this. Mm-hmm. You're not breaking any laws.
Oh, good to know.
And they can sit on your lap and feel in control of something bigger than they are and know that, one, you trust them, and two, they're competent to do it.
Right. Yeah, that's something they'll remember for the rest of their lives.
And I remember when I was learning to drive, my mom had me drive out on an ice-covered lake, and I slipped and slided around. Uh-huh. She's like, we started out going across the lake, and things were going pretty good, and she says, all right, slam on your brakes and turn the wheel. I'm like, no. She says, why not? She says, because it'll spin. She says, well, how are you going to learn to stop it spinning unless you get it started?
Mm-hmm.
And so here I went, brake hard.
Right.
And then I did that until I could pull out of a tailspin.
Yeah. That's good stuff.
It builds confidence. It builds. Yeah. I mean, these are life lessons and education and important things.
Yes.
Now,
which we do not suggest people doing that. By the way, stay off the lakes if you're in Georgia.
Yeah, the Georgia lakes not so good to drive on in the winter.
If you're in Canada, maybe
or northern Minnesota or western Alaska.
But we do not advocate that.
Anyway, so when the kids are a little older and going to school, how can we prepare them for school? I mean, we buy them their boxes of tissues and their glue, and they're ready to go.
Well, you know, I think a lot of it has to do with age-appropriate, just open discussions, kind of talking. It really depends on the age. I mean, we don't want to scare these little elementary school kids to death about a shooting, where maybe something like with my teenage, high schooler, maybe it's something, we would talk about openly. But there's other things, like something that I would do maybe for my high schooler where you would not is one of the things that I have done for her and my stepson as well. Is have created a get home bag, which is different than like the typical, prepper bug out bag, because first of all, it's extremely lightweight.
Mm-hmm.
There's only a few things, because I'm assuming, the whole goal for this is to get from school to home.
Right.
A couple things, and I'll go over them kind of quickly, and I'll put up a list on readyradio.net. Some way to access this list.
I'll mention all of these products we're going to be talking about are available for purchase at True Prep,
exactly.
Our sponsor, and you can swing by True Prep's locations or shop online at www.truprep.com.
There you go. The majority of the things I do have did come from True Prep, including just a smaller, lightweight backpack. They've got a fantastic assortment of backpacks, but there's a smaller, lightweight one that I have for this particular bag that I've put together.
Would that be the Drago Tracker Pack? I have one of those, and I think they're phenomenal.
Oh, they're great. They're great. And there's even some smaller ones, too, I think, that they have. But one of the first things I've done is I've gone to MapQuest, and I've printed out directions from school to home. And if you see the little icons across the top, it always comes up driving instructions. Mm-hmm. There's also a bus transport, but then there's
walking,
exactly. And here's the key. If you print it up walking, it's going to tell you how long it's going to take you to get from point A to point B. Because things look different if you're walking.
If you put in your location and then where you're going to, site B as Mordor, it comes back and says, one does not simply walk into Mordor.
I know, that's one of your favorites.
It's awesome.
Yeah, it is awesome. But water, of course, I think is important. Water can get heavy, so a Berkey Sport bottle is my absolute favorite. I think if you were to walk into True Prep and ask, what is the one thing that could save my life, it's Berkey, hands down.
Absolutely. And the Sport bottle is only $25. Yeah. It'll filter 100 gallons. It weighs less than a quarter pound, the entire bottle. Mm-hmm. And it's useful every day because, if you're drinking out of – it'll keep them from having to buy bottled water at school. They can drink out of the
absolutely.
Water fountain and have water that tastes better than the Dasani that they'll pay $1.50 for.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. I've got some snacks in there, a little trail mix, but also Datrex bars I really love. Couple reasons. They've got about a 5-year shelf life. And there's, basically it's the calories. You just...
2,400 calories for $5. Yes. It'll keep for 5 years, no matter the temperature conditions. These are lifeboat rations designed to be stored in high temperatures. They are tasty, but not delicious, which means that they're not going to be cracking them open to eat them in between class.
Correct. Yeah, exactly. I put a little bit of, a little small thing of toilet paper in there just in case. Rain gear is something else that's in there depending on the day. Now, a two-way radio is excellent to have just in case cell phones towers are not working. Something for my daughter. She's a beautiful little girl. I have a hoodie and a hat in there. So it's sort of like not really a disguise, but she's not walking around looking, all dolled up, like she probably did go into school.
Right.
So it just kind of keeps her, you know, sort of
low
hidden.
Profile.
Low profile, exactly. And you know, there's a couple things like maybe a pair of tennis shoes if she's kind of going through a phase where she's just wearing her boots or something. But her, we've talked about, you know, when it's appropriate to actually head home and when it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And also we've talked about communications. We have more than one direction, so I know which way she's coming if she is. Basically, this is just a bag she keeps in her locker. She knows that if anything severe were to happen, she's to put all of her school items in her locker. She's to take that out and head home. But she knows what circumstances that is, and that's not just, you know, to skip school.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah. No, it's really important to help train your children, to give them the tools they need. And I think that this list is phenomenal. And these are our True Prep products of the week this week. It's a school safety bag.
There you go. Exactly. Well, I tell you what, thanks for sticking around with us today. We've had a great show. And
check us out on Facebook, yes. Twitter, our webpage, www.readyradio.net. You can listen to old shows there. You can catch up on things that are going on with our podcast and just keep abreast of the news of the day, things that are important. Last week we talked about Ebola. Next week we're going to have another exciting topic. We hope that you all enjoyed this show. We'll be back at the same time, same station next week. This is Ready Radio on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.
You've been listening to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy. It's emergency preparedness for everyone. Brought to you by True Prep. For all your prepping needs, visit True Prep online at truprep.com or visit a True Prep store in Roswell or Marietta. Tune in each week as Doug and Amy get you ready for anything that comes your way. Ready Radio, Saturday evenings at 5, only on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.